IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast supported by Pragati, a flagship media initiative of the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like to bring fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and an Indian perspective to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hi, I'm Sarthak, and I welcome you to one more episode of All Things Policy. In this episode, we are going to talk about democracy. There's a context to today's discussion. In recent times, there have been apprehensions about democratic systems. Different studies reflect this trend. The Freedom House reports point towards a continuous retreat of democracy world over for the last 14 years. Surveys conducted by Pew Research also point to the same trend. In this episode, we'll look at some factors which can increase trust in democracy and democratic institutions. To discuss this, I have with me my colleague Apoorv. Apoorv manages Takshila's flagship PGP program in public policy. Hi Apoorv, welcome to All Things Policy.
Hey, thanks Arthur. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah. So before we dive into the factors which impact democracy, I think we should discuss the impacts of democracy on any society. So are there any studies, empirical evidences, which point towards some of the impacts of democracy on any society?
Right, Sarthan. So there are, I would say that I would categorize this kind of literature into two broad categories. One category is about democracy and its positive impacts on overall economic growth, GDP growth, income, prosperity, and so on and so forth. But then there is a recent set of literature, and this set of literature has emerged in the past 6 to 7 years, I would believe, which talks about the twilight of democracy, or the backsliding of democracy, a term that has been oft-used in these literature. So the latter literature talks about the backsliding of democracy in the past 7 or 8 years, which is what you were talking about in your introductory note, while the former set of literature, mostly academic literature, and most of them are actually classic pieces of economic development, economics, and political science. They talk about political implications of democracy, how democratic institutions impact economic growth, prosperity, and also shaping or reshaping a society. So let me sort of give you some examples of this kind of literature. And let me begin by talking about the classic literature, a classic book of Darren Acevedo and Robinson, Why Nations Fail. And their central argument is that the democratic institutions lead to inclusive institutions that can further lead to economic growth, prosperity, and development. And they compare inclusive institutions with extractive institutions, which are sort of, which hamper progress. Then recently, Acemoglu and Robinson have written Narrow Corridor, about which we have, we recorded an episode a few months ago. So Narrow Corridor also talks about, few conditions that can lead to good and robust democracy, which can also lead to liberty and prosperity. And, the recent paper by Acemoglu with others, which is the theme of our podcast, the title of this paper is Successful Democracies Breed Their Own Support. The main argument of this paper is that the amount of time that a society or a country spends within as a democratic sort of a country or within democratic principles, it is correlated to the support of the democracies, which is also known as, democratic gap. And there are other studies also, Santak. So for example, last year, Lancet published a study, at the peak of pandemic, which spoke about, the central argument by the authors was that democratic countries are able to focus more on universal health coverage. There is an increase in public health spending, so on and so forth. So this is the kind of literature that has, emerged in the past few years. And, and this is what our theme of this podcast is.
Yeah, so this is something that I think I should have pointed out in the beginning. So when we are talking about democracy, we are talking about liberal democracies. We're not talking about democracy just like a procedural democracy. We're not talking about brute majority. We're talking about those kind of democratic setups which have rule of law. So basically, we're talking about republics.
That's right, Sarthak. So good clarification, because we are not talking about procedural democracy. We are talking about substantive democracy. And the Lancet study, which I quote, is about substantive democracy, because they argue that within a democratic setup, the citizens would hold the public representatives accountable for delivering public health services, right? And this is very much different from casting your votes after every 5 years.
Yeah, exactly. So in the recent paper by Acemoglu, Successful Democracies Breed Their Own Support, so they have identified certain factors which can lead to increase in support for democracy and democratic institutions. And the study revolves around two things. One is exposure to democracy. Second is experience of successful democracy. Now, what they are saying is, the first hypothesis that they are trying to study is, if there are people who are exposed to democracies, then their support for democracy increases. So if people are not exposed to democracy, again, they might be supporting authoritarian rule, they might be supporting army rule. Now, this is interesting because, just come to think of it, there are different setups right now. There are certain political regimes which are democratic. There are certain political regimes which are authoritarian. So if you are in an authoritarian regime, then your support or the transition from authoritarian regime to a democratic regime might be more difficult. So how do they understand these things? How do they conduct these studies? So what they have done is they have tried to study the experience of immigrants. Right? There might be some people who would have been born and brought up in authoritarian regimes, and over a period of time, they might have moved towards democratic setups. And then how is their experience changing? So that way they have tried to understand it. And again, they have looked at different numbers, and they're saying that if you are exposed to 20 years of democracy, then your preference for a democratic regime increases by almost 8%. This gap is almost equal to the gap that people have preference for democracy in Hong Kong and people have preference for democracy in mainland China.
That's right, Sathik. And, this study, this paper is actually very interesting because all the, older studies on, that revolves around democracy and economic growth. And if I may recall, I think Lipset, the classic paper by Lipset actually talks about this modernization theory, right? That, democracy will sort of survive or sustain at higher income levels. And by the way, India is an outlier on that front, by Subramaniam in his paper on precocious democracy. This paper by Acemoglu is very interesting because they argue that it's not only the income levels, but the exposure of democracy, as highlighted by you, is what matters for the support of democracy. And, there are a few advantages that they have quoted. They have argued that it is these three or four broad advantages that give incentives to citizens to provide their support to a democratic institution. And these four factors are higher economic growth, peace, political stability, and, an efficient sort of public service delivery mechanism.
Yeah. So what they are saying is economic growth, if it is there. So in that case, people's support for democracy will increase. People's trust in democratic institutions will increase. Right. So it's not just exposure. Experience in a democracy is also equally important.
Right.
So if you are in a democratic setup and there is economic growth, which is being ensured by the democratic setup, then people's trust might increase, but it's not the only factor. Apart from economic growth, there are some other factors as well. For example, peace and political stability. So you might be in a democratic setup, but if you don't have enough peace, you do not have enough political stability, then again, trust in democracy might go down. And it can lead to a situation where people might long for having authoritarian leaders. People might want to have leaders who do not really care about parliament or who do not really care about how election processes are being conducted. Or they might also want to have, or they might want to be governed under experts who might not have any form of legitimacy, or who might not have been elected by some legitimate processes. So, and they look at different countries and they find out that there are some countries which has had long history of political instability. And here again, the trust in democratic institutions is quite low. They give the example of Philippines. And the third point that you pointed out, that high public expenditure is also important. Now, what they are saying is, in a democracy, if the quality and quantity of services, public services are good, people's trust in the setup increases. But again, how do you measure, quantify the quality and the quantity of public services? For that, what they're doing is they're using a proxy of public expenditure. So if the public expenditure is quite high, then people might trust these institutions, that people might trust the political institutions more.
Right, Sathak. And, a broad sort of a takeaway from this particular argument is somewhat similar to what the authors of Twilight of Democracy in the past 7 or 8 years, or people who have started writing about the backsliding of democratic principles. I think their argument is also somewhat similar, because this is what they argue, that post-2008 financial crisis, the global economy has not sort of bounced back to its pre-financial crisis sort of, in our conditions. And that is why there is a massive backlash, because there are lack of opportunities, then there is an elite capture, then there is also a cultural backlash. And, these three, four ingredients make it a very good sort of a cocktail for a populist or a majoritarian rule that has prevailed across the world, and which is what, a Freedom Survey or VDM report also talk about. So I think their argument is also very much similar to the argument, ironically, I would say, because this is about the success of democracy, but ironically, their argument is very much similar to what other authors have been, like Larry Tammet and others have been arguing for the past few years.
Yeah, but I think the kind of sample set and the kind of quantitative research that is there in the paper would have been slightly different, I guess. I mean, that this level of details might not have been there in the previous studies, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah. So another interesting aspect here is, I mean, they have talked about the factors which can improve trust in a democracy, right? How experience of a successful democracy leads to greater support for democracy. And all the three factors are economic growth, political and political stability and peace, and high public expenditure. Now, again, I find that there is some form of overlap between these factors, right? There is some form of linkage. Now, for example, if you have economic growth, then only maybe you can go for high public expenditure. If you have economic growth, then only maybe you can ensure peace and political stability. Without economic growth, providing for these things might be difficult. Just think of it, right? If the economic growth is not there, then you might not be able to create institutions, or your institutions might not be staffed properly to ensure peace and political stability. If you are having economic growth, then again, the conflicts can be taken care of. Similarly, if you have high economic growth, then only you have a scope for providing different kind of public services. The quality of services can also improve. And in fact, sometimes we are talking about high public expenditure. When you talk about high public expenditure, people might have these apprehensions that we are being socialistic, government is doing everything. But contrary to this, what evidences we have is, if the per capita incomes are high, if the GDP is high, the proportion of public expenditure is quite high. Countries like US, Sweden, there the public expenditure proportion of its GDP is quite high. In US, the public expenditure is almost 38% of its GDP. In Sweden, it is almost 49% of its GDP. While in India, it is quite low. It's around 27%. So countries which have high GDP, high GDP per capita, they also tend to have high public expenditure. So again, you need to have high economic growth to ensure high public expenditure. So there is some form of an overlap here.
That's right, Sathak. And as you were talking about this theme, I couldn't stop but recall some of the reviews and the comments that came from some of the scholars and reviewers when Why Nation Speak was launched a few years ago. And they said that, this is a chicken and egg situation, that good institutions, good economic growth, or good economic growth lead to good institutions. So again, there is a massive overlap between this theme and there are massive overlaps in the themes that, Esmutu and others have discussed in the recent paper, as you said.
Yeah, this is interesting. Now, another dimension that we need to look at is, what are the implications for India, right? All these points that we have, all these factors can lead to strengthening of democracy. And how does India perform along these lines, and what could be its implications on the democratic setup of India? So if you look at all these factors, right, economic growth, for example. Now, the economy actually contracted last year during the time of the pandemic. And even now, even though the economy has grown, but it is not yet at the pre-pandemic levels. And even before the pandemic, right? So the economic growth rates had been decreasing. So again, if the economic growth rates are not increasing, if the economy is not growing at a good pace, then there are chances that people might start questioning the present setup. People might start questioning the democratic institutions. There might be preference for authoritarian regimes. So this is something that we need to be worried about. Second thing is when it comes to peace and political stability, right? Again, there have been different kinds of challenges in the Indian context. There have been different kinds of conflicts, not necessarily armed conflicts, but different kinds of other conflicts, right? Communal conflicts, other kind of issues have been there. So if peace and political stability gets hampered, right? Again, questions will be raised about the democratic setup, and we have seen different kinds of conflicts emerging. And the third thing is public expenditure. Now, in the last couple of years, our public finance situation has not been really good. And since the economy is not doing well, it does not provide sufficient bandwidth for the governments to be spending on public expenditure, public services, right? So this again can lead to a situation where again, democracy might backslide. So if you analyze along these three lines, there can be challenges to the democratic institutions. People might question the legitimacy of these institutions.
Right, Sarthak. And if you see a lot of the sort of a turmoil and the clash, if I may use the word, that has gripped the world in the past 7 or 8 years is similar to what you have just said, that most of the four factors that you have spoken about, that it is these four factors that lead to a robust democracy, and a robust democracy ensure that these four sort of factors are there in a society so that the society can progress and thrive. And if these two camps are sort of, you know, compromised, then we are in a big situation. And, you know, in India, we are seeing a lot of this unraveling. So as you said that, you know, economics is in disarray. I would go ahead and say that even our social fabric is in disarray in the past 7 or 8 years. Because of that, many Indian scholars have started talking, and of course, they have written a lot in the past 7 or 8 years about the backsliding of Indian democracy and the health of Indian democracy. So I think this is what is written war situation for all of us, because as I said that, you know, there's a lot of entropy in our society and our economics in India and you know, globally. And a lot will depend on how these factors will sort of play, how these factors will interact with each other so that a robust democracy is ensured both in the world and in India. But that's a wait and watch situation, Sarthak. And I'm very optimistic about it.
Correctly pointed out, Apoorv. So thanks, Apoorv, for joining us in this episode. Thanks to our listeners for tuning in. We'll meet again in one more episode of All Things Policy.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle, @TakshashilaInst, or our website, takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week: Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank, and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.